Shoot. What's going on, everybody? It's the Fishman. That's with two R's. Feel free to follow me on Instagram, Twitter. And I got my lovely co-host with me. Go ahead and introduce yourself, Mama.
Oh, all right. Alley Cat. I don't even want to spell it. But it's A-L-L-E-E-Y __ K-A-T-T.
Alley Cat.
That's it.
All right, dope. And so today we have another special guest. I know you can't see on the visual, but she is right here with us. So real quick, go ahead and introduce yourself. And yes, you can tell them.
Hey. I'm Hassan's big sister. Nah, just joking. My name is Clarissa. I'm at This Afropolitan Life. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Real quick, just so I know we're gonna jump into it eventually, but I just want to go ahead and talk, what is This Afropolitan Life? What's the significance behind it? Then we're gonna jump into the wines that we drink.
This Afropolitan Life was a play on This American Life, an NPR podcast I listen to a lot. But This Afropolitan is a term that Tate Selassie, who's a writer, she wrote Ghana Must Go. Mm. And she kind of coined this term for Africans who are at home anywhere and everywhere. Like, when you ask someone like me, where are you from? I'm like, well, I'm from Ghana, I'm from America.
Right.
I'm from, like, I have half my family from Sierra Leone. Like, I'm from everywhere. And so it's really hard to place me. And so it's just this concept of an African who's at home in any cosmopolitan city who draws influences from all over globally. So This Afropolitan Life was a blog for about 10 years. I haven't blogged in a while, but it's still an identity I hold on to. Yeah. So I've been doing a lot of work in this kind of like identity, you know, fear. I'm a writer. I write for
Radiant Health Magazine.
Yeah.
What's the magazine called?
It's called Radiant Health Magazine. It's a health magazine. Think of like an essence, like African women all over the world, like Afropolitans, maybe, if I can use that word freely. But so I write for that magazine. I do some freelance work as well.
Awesome. Once again, that is Radiant Magazine. Please feel free
to check
Radiant Health Magazine. Awesome. Please feel free to check it out. You know, I had to bring Sis on here. She's an amazing writer, amazing thinker, and honestly, part of the inspiration for this podcast, honestly.
Amazing person, period.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah. Nah, for sure.
Yeah, let me scoot this back just a little bit.
You got it. So real quick, man, want to go ahead and introduce the wine that we're drinking. So Alex, what wine you done picked up from the grocery store?
All right, so we got what's called Mason Number 9. It's what it looked like.
Ooh.
Right? Look at that.
That's interesting.
It's even fancy, right?
It looks solid.
Yeah, and it's long.
It looks like it's going to get you lit.
Right? Yeah. Let me look at this. Night. Oh, it's a 12 and a half. Constant.
All right, cool. But let's go ahead and pull it up.
Oh,
is it open already?
Oh, it's not open.
Y'all, it's too cute.
No, because like it looked like it's clear. The top is clear. So anyway, yeah, I'm professional. Okay, can you open it?
All right, got you. Well, while we try to open this up, can I call you Nana on here,
or do
I
have to call you Clarissa? Sure.
What you drinking?
Yeah, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking 19 Crimes, the Uprising, which is like one of our favorite reds.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very delicious.
Yeah.
I don't know the wine terminology, but
yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I think it's oak barrel, like something.
Come on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, let's go ahead and make a toast real quick. You here with us in spirit?
Yes.
All right. Awesome.
Clank,
awesome.
Clank, clank.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Oof.
It was,
is it dry?
It's dry.
Right.
It's dry.
I don't like, yeah.
But it's good. It's not bad.
We're trying to switch it up and do more of a white wine than a red.
Okay.
That's what happens when you try to be on the fly.
Nah,
trying to switch things up.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah. You picked this one.
You guys got to try Whispering Angels next.
Whispering Angels?
Yeah.
Okay, write that down, write that down.
That's a good, the light line is white, it's not red.
Okay.
It's a rose.
Whispering Angels. All right, cool. So now, so we've done a lot of the introductions, and I really just felt like it was really important to bring you on this episode just because of your interesting sense of identity and things that you want to hold on, that you have done in this space, right? And so before we even jump in, I kind of want to go ahead and introduce this author and the book that we're reading today. It's called Homegoing by Ya JC. Hope I'm saying that correctly. Oh my Ghanaians will be mad at me if I'm not. But Ya JC is a Ghanaian American novelist who debuted this book in 2016.
It won. That pepper, y'all. That pepper. He was just talking about me and how I had a cough attack. And he was making fun of me. And now, look, cough attack. Okay. It's not the COVID. It's the pepper.
I've been trying to hold it in.
I'm still trying to tell you.
All right, cool. All right. So she won many awards. And she won an award for the best book, Homegoing. And it stands at the intersectionality of Blackness in the Diaspora. So want to kick this off with... first off, this book encapsulates a lot of different stories over the span of Black people from the transatlantic slave trade till, I'll say, fairly now, right? So really quick, before we can jump into it, what is one story that really resonates with you?
I read this book when it came out. But go ahead, Alicat.
I just started kind of like skimming through it, going back through it and picking it back up because I did read it like some time ago. Yeah. And it's a lot of stories, right? So it's a lot of...
I'm ready.
Okay, then go ahead then.
All right.
Come on.
So the story that resonated with me, honestly, was Big H. And oddly enough, right, I'm relatively tall. I'm like, you know, I'm 6 foot. I'm 6'10", 250. But I've always embodied this idea of what it means to be like this Black. And I feel like when people think of Black people, they think of people like H, this big, broad, burly Black man who needs to be taken down by like 3 or 4 cops, right? And it's like, when they see me, that's who they think of. They think of this big Black person, right? And then at the end of his story, he then became an activist for his community. And he was also big on like uniting the people that were there, that were working at the mines. So that story kind of really resonated with me just because I feel like I've always sat at this place where even though I wasn't trying to be this big Black, you know, burly, husky person, that's how people saw me. And well, white people, I feel like Black people, they kind of just understood what it was. And I feel like now I'm trying to, you know, bring people together. And I feel like his story kind of closely resonates with me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now that I've said mine, we're going to kick it over to one of y'all two.
Should I go ahead? I'm not going to say because I read it a while ago and there's some stories that are coming to me. Like, I remember the first story with the two sisters who got separated and one ended up marrying the governor and the other one ended up going on the slave trip, was in the belly of the ship. Mm-hmm. I remember that distinctly. I also remember the story of the governor's son who was gay. And then, you know, the other story, I don't know if it's the same story, but the other one coming back and not wanting anything to do with the richness of his, his rich lineage and wanting to just kind of like disappear. Mm-hmm. And he ended up being with...
That was James.
James. Okay. So the stories aren't coming to me now, but I do remember the spirit of the book.
Yeah.
And I do remember how beautifully everything came together over the 300-year span that she wrote about. Yeah. And I also remember the end where the two college students,
Marcus and Marjorie,
and they re-baptized themselves in the water. And that was beautiful to me because it was like coming home. And it's like, you know, just seeing everything with fresh eyes, right? And the spirit of the book was remarkable in that sense, and being able to capture all of the journeys of different kinds of Black people or different kinds of stories within the theme of that book. That was amazing. That was a very interesting feat.
For as
little as the book is, it's not a big book. Not,
right. Yeah.
It's not.
You know, but she was able to do that with amazing dexterity.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that about the book. Yeah. So I'll go ahead and say that. That's my piece.
Beautiful.
Okay, so I feel like, do you agree with that? Or
absolutely.
Like,
and I kind of want to say a little bit more too, that it kind of touches on like different themes throughout, like just the Black
experience
right? Like they were talking about mental health and drugs and just different things that I'm like, whoa, like I can resonate with that because I see it.
Yeah.
And my ancestors have been through it. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was beautiful. And then she like wrote it beautifully too.
Yeah.
Like
it was a page turner.
Yeah.
I also think that she did a really good job of showing the parallel struggle. Ooh, you know, a lot of times we talk about the African-American struggle.
Yeah.
You know, because we live in it and it's like, you know, you got police brutality, you got slavery, you got, you know, Jim Crow, you got Reconstruction, you know, the drugs of the 80s, and you got Vietnam, you got, there's so much that the African-American colony, because that's what it was, it's, you know, colonized people in America, there's so much that they have been through that, and also pioneered. Mm-hmm. Because of how forward and how aggressive and how much they've tried, like they've tried everything gain liberation. So they've done a lot of the work for a lot of other, you know, Black people around the world as a blueprint, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that Yajase did a really good job of paralleling the struggle between the colony here
and
the
colony
there, and you know. In West Africa, because I mean, they're both, if you think about it, both colonized people, and to a larger extent, I think I'm going to speak for Ghana. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, we're still struggling with a lot of like the neo-colonialistic mindset, and you know, just this. Even though we may not have had a Vietnam War, or influx of drugs, or all of these different things that have, you know, definitely been highlight reels in the African American experience.
Yeah.
There's definitely a struggle that is not talked about.
Yeah.
In West Africa.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say more specifically because it's the country of you know. So I think she did a really good job of showing the parallel struggle, so African Americans could see themselves in the African struggle, and Africans can see themselves in the African American struggle.
Yeah.
So I think that was really. That was a highlight for me.
Yeah.
Perfect bridge.
I know it. Like honestly, after reading this book, I gained so much more perspective on myself and the world around me. And I remember telling everybody I knew to read this book because I was like, "Yo, I'm just so tired of this divide between African Americans and like the Africans and." It just felt so unnecessary because we both went through some type of trauma. And granted, and I always say like Africans, when they leave Africa and come to America, they're able to remove themselves from their trauma for a second. And I feel like they're able to then be a little objective to what plight is going on in America and had to understand what plight is going on in Africa. Right. And but I feel like that isn't always the other side of the coin, whereas a lot of African Americans are able to then remove themselves from their trauma and kind of go be in Africa and see and then be objective about what it's like living in America and what it's like living in Africa as well. You know what I mean? So, all right, we just talked about a lot real quick, but I kind of want to know, because I feel like this book talks a lot about the stories behind identity, right? And so how do you identify and how does that connect to your story? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start with you and then.
We always start with the guests. I think we will be best. Mm-hmm. We'll be close. I'm not going to go. You know what? Because I think I'm in a space where I'm currently trying to kind of redefine my identity. I think I took on the identity, of course, of a Black woman, but then I was like taking on things that I felt like were not necessarily mine, if that makes sense. Like, I kind of found myself like taking on the, what Black people are supposed to be like in other people's eyes. Like, Black people was like, are identified as like loud or being this or being that, like these different things. And I try to take that on because that's what I thought that it was. Because like my mom, she was just herself. She wasn't like, I'm Black, I'm a Black woman. Like, it wasn't any of that going on in my world, in my space. So I was just Alex. I was not little Black girl, Alex. I didn't like own a sense of Blackness. I just was. And so as I got older, I took on like some of these things that I feel like is and is not. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else to say that. Mm-hmm. But is and is not.
Hey sis, I have a question, right? Mm-hmm. So I remember when I went to Ghana when I was two. Right. And I stayed there. And I remember when I came back when I was like 7, 8, I was coming back during the summer of my 8th birthday. Right. Shout out to all the Leo babies. And I remember when I first got introduced to the fact that I was Black.
Black or African? Which one?
Black. Because Black. And what I'm saying that it's like, I ain't never got called nigga, mm-hmm. but I had to understand what nigga meant though. Mm-hmm. And I think it was, I think I was in the 5th grade. So I had to be around like 9, 10. And that was the first time I actually thought of myself as a Black man. Like, I didn't really conceptualize that idea. So I'm curious about you going, like, when was that time for you? If that was ever a time for you, when did you become conscious of it?
So as far as like Blackness and identity, like, I'm an interesting, I guess I can see why for you that was the first time you realized you were Black, is because, you know, you were really young when you went to Ghana, and even though we were both born here, you were really young. You were 2 when we went, and I was 10 going on 11, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think because Ghana is like culturally and racially, it's pretty homogenous. Mm-hmm. Everyone's Black. You know,
I really Black, didn't know.
You know, police officers are Black.
Right.
Black. Everybody's Black, right? So, and even then, I'm just gonna go ahead and throw this in there. There's a lot of colorism, and we can talk about that differently at a different time. But there is an issue of colorism, because I remember when we went out in Ghana, you know, people be like, "Well, you know, they." It was just weird. Yeah. Anyway, so but for me, because I went when I was like 10, 11, mm-hmm. And I spent my formative years there, I had been called a nigger before mm-hmm. I went to Ghana. When I lived in California for a little bit with my aunt, I remember the kids, because our parents had gotten into a divorce, and so I was living with my aunt in California while my mom was trying to get herself together before we went to Ghana. And when we lived there, we lived in this very segregated community. Mm-hmm. And I remember the kids, when we would go after school, we would, me and my cousins would go outside, go play with the kids outside. And then the kids' parents, who were white people, Asian people, would call their kids back into the house. Mm-hmm. Like, wow. They would legit be playing on the driveway with all the big wheels and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then me and my cousin would start walking the block, and then they would just think, oh, you gotta come inside now, bring the toys in. Mm-hmm. And we would be sitting there like, okay, wow, you know. Mm-hmm. So we had that experience of racism.
Yeah.
I had the experience of racism before I went to Ghana. So going to Ghana actually was a really huge confidence boost for me because it was like, wow, you know, everyone's Black. And so there's alleviation of this whole racial, weight. And then also, culturally, like there was this freedom to be smart in Ghana. Like, you know, you had to be smart. So it's like, I actually thrived in Ghana because I could be myself.
Wow.
Whereas here, I kind of felt like to be a Black girl, you had to play a role. Like you had to be,
exactly.
That snack.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly.
Black. I never fit into that role. I still don't.
Right.
But I appreciate it. I actually do think it's beautiful. So coming back, actually, I came back when I was about 16 and finished out high school here. I did middle school in Ghana, finished out high school here, went to college here, did everything else here. And I had reverse culture shock because coming back in high school, it's a whole other ballgame.
You got the accent.
It's different.
Y'all, I remember what y'all said about me. I remember each and every one of y'all that called me an African beauty stretch. Like, I remember it. All right, cool.
It was definitely different, but I was definitely a lot more confident. A lot more confident in who I was coming back from Ghana than I would have been if I had stayed here. And so, so I guess, does that answer your question?
Yeah, no,
it
does.
Identity-wise, I've always felt like when I was in Ghana, I was the American girl. And people loved me for it. Like, honestly, there was a privilege that came with being the American girl, like, Ghana back in the day.
Ghanaians got it just like you got it. Hey, nobody cared.
And then coming here, there was also a freedom. You know, there was a stigma, but there was a freedom that came with being African. Right?
Speak on it.
African Americans didn't fuck with me like that. There was like, she African, but there was a freedom because I was coming from a place where I had, like, I was 16. Like, I had passed that formative phase. I wasn't interested in, like,
making friends
and playing dumb or, you know, not finishing my work
with,
like, all the other kids were doing, like, you know, cussing at the teachers. I went to a hood school. Like, it was like 90% Black. In Maryland. Like, I was not interested in being, you know, the stereotype of what a Black girl is supposed to be. And unfortunately, I mean, I didn't have a lot of friends, but I didn't care. So there was a reverse culture shock. And there, until this day, I still feel like I'm not African enough to be African. And I'm not American enough to be American, but I'm okay with just being in between now. I'm old enough where it's like, it's not a big thing. And now, like, it's dope to be different. Like, everybody wants to play in Africa.
Everybody, look.
That's it. You had to, it was a struggle out here.
Okay.
Real struggle.
So, you know, just to add on to the story in a weird way, mine was the opposite. I felt less confident. Being in America, because the thing that had made me feel that had gave me a sense of familiarity in these homogeneous groups, now I was starting to stand out. Now I would be the darkest kid in my class. Now I would be the darkest kid in the crayon box. And this was like the first time it made sense, like, oh, my color is like the issue. Like, I remember literally, like, crying, like, coming home, like, bawling my eyes out, like, I just didn't feel confident at all, you know. And I feel like in the reverse, I kind of like slipped on that. But I wanted
colorism is an issue.
It is.
Oh yeah, I feel like we can get into that for like days and days and days.
We could.
I remember when you were 2, we went to this this happened in restaurant in Accra, and you're playing on like the they have like a little playground inside the restaurant for kids, And the people who worked there were like, thought that you were like one of the Koala boys, like one of the street kids, because you were so dark and you had like BDBs in your head. Mm-hmm. And so my mom, like mom actually had to go cuss her out. My mom, mom don't give a fuck. So mom was like,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, my mom is like a little darker than Alex, so they didn't believe that I could be my mom's child. No, that's crazy. All right, so the next thing I kind of wanted to, and I feel like it's a good segue, is 23andMe, right?
He's black ancestry.com.
Yeah.
I
have.
What's the other one? I forget.
Yeah.
All of them.
DNA something. Something.
Ancestry.
Ancestry.com. All right. So I have, and I've spoken to a lot of my cousins who, you know, are Black American. I call y'all cousins because y'all still family. And there's this like, yo, I gotta take the DNA test. I really want to know where I'm from. And I'm always like, no, you don't have to, right? But the reason why I say that is because I feel like, all right, if you just look at West African culture, it's all synonymous. It's like they're different. They're so similar, and they're like different variations of the same thing. So for me, I'm like, yeah, you're going to get that you are Ghanaian, but even the borders that Ghana is created off of is not even by Ghanaians, right? It's like, to me, I feel, and I understand the frustration, right, of not knowing. Like, I get it. Granted, I could probably never actually empathize with that feeling, but it's
because
like,
you know where you're from.
Yeah, right.
Right. We've had this.
So argument. As you, as like, you know, a Black American, how do you feel about it? And there's two questions. How do you feel about it? And then two, what connection do you think we can make with Black people in America and Africans, right? And then that's just going to be the question for everybody to answer, but you can start off.
Yeah, so I'm going to start with the first one.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then because I don't remember what you said the second
one. I got you.
I don't remember that. So when we first had the conversation, I was feeling like no, like it feels like, at the time, I felt like, still the loss of my identity, so I felt like I had to go back and I had to know like where I'm from in order to complete myself. But now I think I'm at a point where it's like, you know, your identity is like your, kind of like almost like your nationality a little bit. It's like I'm from America.
Right.
And so that is like a part of my identity. And I mean, if you want to know, I feel like it's nothing wrong with wanting to know, but I think like you should want to know for like more of like your genetic disposition, like health reasons or like maybe mental health reasons. I think that would be the reason why I would try to figure it out, just so I can like see like where some of my my health concerns kind of lie at. But other than that, it's not going to complete me as who I am or like, right. You know, like, you know, I've been told like I'm from South Africa, and, you know, I'm with Hassan, so I'm like, I'm Ghanaian. So it's like I'm all different types. And I'm like, that's cool. But it doesn't, I mean, whatever. Right. But it just, if you want to know, like, I mean, it's no shame, of course, but it doesn't make your, like, who you are.
Right. And also, so I think American culture is culture.
Yes.
Like,
exactly.
People
right. That's exactly.
All over the world are biting off American culture, you know, and so I just want to add that. But
not Black culture?
Black culture is culture. I feel like it has its traditions. It has its language. It has its everything, right? So for me, I'm like, I think we have to stop. I think one, Africans have to stop looking at Americans as though they have no culture.
Yeah,
and have to look at it as a culture exchange, because you're benefiting from a Black American culture. You over here talk about, you know, nigga this, nigga that. You got bandanas. That ain't true.
Yeah.
That ain't true. That's not true.
That's,
not true.
I think culture is definitely fluid, especially in America. especially now that,
yeah.
Especially now with globalization, the world's just so much smaller. It's really hard to untangle where we're today, even the Africans are just going to be like, you know, it's whatever.
It's
It's going to be really hard to be like, I'm trying to maintain my Ghanaian culture and how they're the white man. Like, listen, blue jeans are everywhere.
That's a really
dope. That's introspective.
Perspective. Blue jeans are everywhere.
Blue jeans are everywhere and African print. As long as people are watching TV, you know, getting stamps in their passports, you know, going to Ghana for Christmas break and chilling hard and heavy, it's going to be like the Gambians and the Ghanaians and somebody from Compton is going to be like, there are going to be so many like identity
overlaps.
That it is what it is.
Yeah.
I think that it's important for Black. I think it's important for Black people to know where they're. I mean, they want to know where they're from.
Yeah.
I think if that's your prerogative, great, go for it.
Right.
If you're more comfortable being from everywhere, because honestly, I think that that's. At this point, I think that's the main thing. Like Kwame Nkrumah said, he's African because, you know, he's at home anywhere. I think when he was exiled in the Gambia, he said something along the lines of, you know, I'm at home here because I'm in Africa.
Yeah.
Like everywhere in Africa is home.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm gonna take that a step further. Like everywhere there's Black people at home.
Come on.
You know what? That's what made me think of like when you were talking about this Afropolitan life, right? It's like I'm home wherever. I am wherever you are.
Like, I can go to Brazil, you know, Bahia, and just be like, I'm home.
Yeah,
right, exactly. Right.
They understand things about me, and I understand things about that we might not speak the same language.
Right.
But I tell you what,
come on.
You know, if I need my hair braided, they'll point me in the right direction.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
You know, if I need some cornrows, like, all right, I'll hook you up.
Yeah. Some locks.
You know, the fried plantanos. Listen.
It's all the same. Maduros.
I'm a home where there's Black people. So I think that the work now, I think that that whole work of, you know, getting Black people to, or African Americans rather, to Black Americans, whatever we're calling ourselves these days, and the work of getting them to acknowledge Africans as comrades or as you know, as sisters and brothers. I think that work has been done. I think the work now is just getting us to see each other everywhere, you know, everywhere. We're all the same. And if we can see ourselves as one people in a diasporic culture,
then
I think that, you know, we'll be in a better place. So
That
was nice.
Literally, I was about to ask you, like, what do you think we should do to? So you beat that question.
We don't have to convince each other anymore. Like, I don't convince
to
come to Ghana for vacation. Like, it's standard.
It's a given. It's a given.
Yeah.
Why are you not coming?
Now it's
a listen.
People know that we don't live off trees.
Listen.
And ride elephants anymore.
Right.
You know what's crazy, though, sis? You know what's crazy? I really feel like there's still, I know we're supposed to be, you know, thinking and progressive and kumbaya, but there's still a group of people who really think that, like, who really think that African people are just, like, at the bottom. Like, even when I was teaching in New York, right, one of my parents, and I mean, it could be a one-off instance, but it's just the reality of the situation, right? One of my parents, she was from Trinidad and Tobago, right? And she was like, she literally made a comment about having lions and tigers and stuff. And I was like, you was like 36 years old talking like that. Like, it wasn't like she's like some old woman. And sorry, I just had to add that.
But, I mean, I think there's two things with that. There's one willful ignorance.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember in high school, this girl named Marquita was like, I ain't African because I'm Black. I'm from Africa. What you mean? What you mean? I ain't from Africa. No. And she was like really hurt. And I was like, I was fresh off the boat. Like, you know, Black people, we're from Africa. And she's like, what? I ain't from Africa. What you mean? No. And just because I'm Black, I mean, I'm from Africa. So that really, that stuck with me.
Yeah.
Like, there's some people who just really don't, either are willfully ignorant or really just don't know. And then the second, there's a second part to that, and that's, like, don't forget, like, this whole appreciation for African culture is new. And
yes.
It's relatively
it is new. Yeah.
Young.
Yeah. Yes.
And
yeah.
I think that
that's
there
true.
Are a lot of people who are, like, in Generation X who are still on that, you know,
yeah.
you know, African voodoo scratcher tip.
Yeah.
Who just are willfully ignorant. Just like, this Africa's never going to be a destination for them.
Right.
The reason why it's so young is, like, I think that a lot of the young people, second generation American Africans, African kids of African immigrants,
yeah.
who went to school with, you know, went to high school, elementary school, were born here,
mm-hmm.
are literally bicultural. Like, they're both African American with the African American experience,
yeah.
as far as like being Black in America, maybe mm-hmm. not necessarily share the history, but being having the experience mm-hmm. of racism, of
yeah.
Police brutality, like having that experience of being Black in America or being in one colony for another, we basically lived both of those experiences. And so I think for most of us, we're cultural bridges. So we speak, mm-hmm. we are African Americans, but African Americans can speak to us like, oh, what's that you're eating? Jollof rice, let me taste that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
right.
It's good.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And because we're cultural bridges, we're able to bring people from both sides along. You know, bring the Africans over, like, just because he's African American doesn't mean he's lazy.
Yeah.
Just because he's African American doesn't mean, you know, they don't like the Africans like to say, you know, stay away from the Akasa people.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We are in essence Akasa people,
right?
Excuse my use of that term, but it's something that our parents have always said, and it's something that they still do today. It irks me. But there were also a cultural bridge for African Americans who want to know more about African culture, who experience African culture through us,
yeah.
living our houses on the weekends, coming up, pulling up, you know, going
eating
to
our food.
Parties,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's like this whole cultural exchange
mm-hmm.
is really young.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so
yeah.
the people who were like from like Generation X, people over like 40.
Yeah.
35, 40 is still
they're
like
still high. No, you
yeah.
just gave a lot of perspective. But look,
yeah.
So I, first and foremost, had an awesome conversation, and I hate to bring it to a close, but I feel like, you know, it's been a really awesome conversation, and I'm really happy that you came on. How people can, one, get to know more about you, how they can get in contact with you, kick it with you, skate with you.
all of it.
Well, my work, I mean, just Instagram, really, mm-hmm. at this Afropolitan Life. You know, my portfolio, my work is on thursabear.com, but I'm really on Instagram. You know, I try to keep the socials to a minimal, so
yeah, for sure. For sure. Y'all, listen, man, thank you so much for rocking with us once again on the Shine Love podcast. It's your boy, yours truly, the Fishman. That's with two R's, and we got
Alley Cat. Okay, let me try this way. A double L double E Y double underscore.
No, it hit. K-A double T.
Okay, is that better?
Fire.
All right. I don't know about that. We're gonna.